Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It is Saturday, July 2nd, but that means, well, we have the weekly recap, a compilation of all of the top stories that we covered throughout the week, all in one convenient location. Hope you enjoy the video. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk. Extra wallets are the most efficient small wallet in the world. Are you tired of losing your wallet? Well, Extra wallets come with a solar-powered tracker. The tracker has a worldwide lost and found network. The solar battery charges in 3 hours and lasts up to 2 months. Here I have a wallet from the Parliament Classic Collection. It's made of environmentally certified premium leather, has an extra pocket for cash, and holds up to 12 credit cards. The solar-powered tracker fits right here. Extra has tons of styles in their wallets to choose from, ranging from wallets and card holders to bag and laptop cases. Go to shop.extra.com/crimetalk and you will get 20% off site-wide. I'll put the discount link in the video description so you can check out the wallets for yourself. Let's go ahead and open the docket for Tuesday, June 28th, 2022. So 40 minutes before Curtis Eddie Smith's bond hearing, South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson announced that the state grand jury had indicted Mr. Smith on drug charges. He also announced a shocking new charge against Alec Murdoch, accusing him of being a drug dealer. Now, Murdoch and Smith both face two counts of conspiracy, including a narcotics count related to oxycodone. Smith was also indicted on four counts of money laundering, three counts of forgery, trafficking methamphetamine, 10 to 28 grams, one count of unlawful possession of Schedule II controlled substance, and possession of marijuana. Now, the indictment was unsealed today, and it refers to Smith, Murdoch, and others known and unknown who took part in an 8-year criminal conspiracy. The Hampton County grand jury had previously indicted Smith on November 4th of 2021 for a false claim for payment, filing a false police report and conspiracy, pointing and presenting a firearm at a person, assault and battery of a high and aggravated nature, and assisted suicide. Those allegations are related to the bizarre Labor Day suicide for hire plot involving Mr. Murdoch and Mr. Smith. Now, Smith has also previously been indicted by the Colleton County Grand Jury on November 18th, 2021 for possession of methamphetamine with intent to distribute and possession of marijuana. Now, in the indictment venued in Colleton County, the state grand jury alleges criminal conspiracies regarding approximately 437 checks totaling approximately $2.4 million that went from Murdoch to Mr. Smith between October 7th of 2013 through February 28th, 2021. The two were also indicted in alleged conspiracy regarding the distribution and purchase of oxycodone. Now, Smith is indicted for the four counts of money laundering over $100,000 regarding the alleged disposition of the checks. And the state grand jury also charged Smith with forgery for allegedly forging endorsements on some of the checks. Smith is also indicted for three other drug offenses, including allegedly trafficking over 10 grams of methamphetamine. Now, the crimes charged in the indictment carry the following classifications and penalties. Conspiracy is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison and up to a $5,000 fine. Money laundering over $100,000 more is a felony punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a $250,000 fine. Forgery, $10,000 or more, is a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison or a fine at the discretion of the court. And forgery for value, $10,000 or less, is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison. The manufacturing, possession with intent to distribute, is a felony punishable by up to 2 years in prison. And trafficking in methamphetamine there in South Carolina carries a maximum penalty of up to 10 years in prison. The possession of a controlled substance, once again, also a felony, up to 6 months in prison or a fine of up to $1,000. Now, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, also known as SLED, is conducting the statewide grand jury investigation, and the South Carolina Attorney General's Office, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the United States Attorney's Office were all involved in
This indictment and the case will be prosecuted by the South Carolina Attorney General's office. So now, although we give Mr. Alex Murdaugh the presumption of innocence because he has not pled guilty in a court of law or been found guilty by a jury, it's really starting to look like the whole situation is that he was running a criminal enterprise down there in the Lowcountry, which just breaks my heart because I love the Lowcountry. The people down there are so nice. It's beautiful. But all those rumors, and we did a podcast about Alex Murdaugh's grandfather who was indicted for running a alcohol drug conspiracy while he was in the office of the prosecutor down there. So apparently the old apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, allegedly. But things are not looking good for Alex Murdaugh. All right. Remember, subscribe if you have not, like the video if you do, and leave me a comment about what we discuss here today on the channel. Now, we have some new orders from Judge Boyce in the Lori Vallow matter. Now, Judge Boyce formally issued an order regarding the change of venue for Lori Vallow. As you may recall, these are separate cases within the judicial system, and, well, the court has to make separate rulings because although the cases have been joined legally, technically, the court still needs to do some procedural things. So we'll continue. The court provided some procedural history by stating that on May 24th, 2021, a Fremont County grand jury returned an indictment charging defendants Chad Guy Daybell and Lori Vallow with multiple crimes, including conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and first-degree murder. On May 27th of 2021, Judge Boyce entered an order staying the defendant's case, Lori Vallow's, because of incompetency issues. And pursuant to the statute and on the basis that the defendant had been deemed incompetent and subsequently ordered her to receive restoration treatment and care, that was on June 28. Mark Means, the previous counsel for Ms. Vallow, filed a motion to transfer trial, but pursuant to the stay of the case, the motion was never noticed for an actual hearing. So on August 6th of 2021, Judge Boyce entered an order clarifying that for purposes of conducting a jury trial, the case of Idaho v. Chad Daybell and cited the case number and the case of State of Idaho versus Lori Noreen Vallow are currently joined. So during this time, the case was stayed for Lori Vallow on July 7th of 2021, alleged co-conspirator Chad Guy Daybell, through his attorney, filed a motion for change of venue, which was argued on October 5th, 2021. On October 8th, 2021, the court issued a memorandum decision and order granting the motion, recommending a transfer of the trial to Ada County. And October 21st, 2021, the Idaho Supreme Court entered an order into Chad Daybell's case number, ordering the case to be transferred for purposes of trial only. Then on April 11th of 2022, this court entered an order lifting the stay of the case after determining that the defendant, Lori Noreen Vallow, had been restored to competency. And then on October 19th of 2022, the defendant was arraigned on the charge filed in the indictment entered on May 25th of 2021. Now, during that April 19th, 2022 hearing in Fremont County, the State of Idaho's motion to reconsider the court's prior decision to transfer the trial from Fremont County to Ada County, James Archibald, in his capacity as appointed counsel for the defendant, Lori Vallow, was asked to advise the court regarding the previously filed motion to transfer and to clarify the defendant's position on the transfer of the trial. Mr. Archibald stated to the court and represented the defendant stated her expressed position was to have the jury selection and jury trial held in Ada County. Now, accordingly, then the defendant renewed her motion to transfer trial and joined in the objection of the state's motion to reconsider the issue. Judge Boyce stated this issue was previously determined on the merits after a full hearing in the companion case, which was Chad Daybell's. And as a companion case involving co-conspirators, this court found that the issues previously determined on the issue of transfer of the trial mirror those in this case, and the court herein adopts the previous conclusions as they relate to this case. Judge Boyce states that the order of this court in this case is to transfer the trial for Lori Vallow to the Supreme Court, and pursuant to the applicable rules, this court recommends that Judge Boyce continue his assignment over the case and be tried together in Ada County for both cases. Now, as I stated, Judge Boyce requested the Idaho Supreme Court to enter that order so that the trial be transferred for Lori Vallow for the reasons stated above. Now, the other order memorialized the court's trial date schedule. So this trial is supposed to begin for Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell, and they have blocked out beginning on January 9th of 2023 and going through March 17th of 2023 to complete it. Now, obviously, jury selection may take a while, but if they do it correctly and efficiently, maybe a week at most, I think that can get done. So 2 months to try this case, 2.5 months really, by the time you take out the jury selection process. The court also ordered that basically Lori Vallow has to file any motions, and they have to be filed in a timely fashion so that they can be heard on the motions hearing date of November 9th. Now, that date is also going to be a pretrial readiness conference, and on the day of that pretrial readiness conference, both parties have to be able to inform the court whether this case is going to trial, whether they're ready or not, or whether there's going to be another request for a continuance. The court also stated in this somewhat standard order that all plea agreements should be reduced to writing and obviously signed by all the attorneys and the defendant if there's going to be a plea agreement. And written notice has to be given 90 days in advance of trial if a party intends to raise the issue of mental condition and or expert witnesses concerning such issues of mental capacity. Plan on that notice being given the fact that Lori Vallow was deemed to be incompetent. I'm sure there were experts probably say that she's been in this state of where she wasn't competent and can truly appreciate what's taking place, which goes to the requisite mental state, probably dating back years. So we'll see. The court also says if there's going to be any motions to continue, they have to state the reason, and it must be in writing and accompanied by an order to vacate the trial and reset. Hopefully that will not be an issue. This case has gone on too long. It needs to be tried. And if there's going to be a request by the defense, you have to be prepared to waive speedy trial. Because no, I think that's already an issue in this case. And jury instructions have to be submitted by November 9th as well. Now, the last thing that the court does in this kind of general order states that the presiding judge intends to use a panel of judges as alternates to preside at trial or any other hearings or proceedings. And it states that notice is given that there are multiple defendants. The presiding judge must determine whether the co-defendants have a sufficient interest in common to be required to join any disqualification without cause, or whether they have an adverse interest. As you may recall, apparently there's kind of a unique rule. I've never seen it before. But there in Idaho, basically, if you don't like the judge, you can basically disqualify them without cause for any reason. I don't think that Lori Vallow has previously already done that. I'd have to go back and double check, and I wasn't able to do that beforehand. But I don't think that'll take place, but you never know. This thing, there's always something that pops up, and it always seems to delay the trial, or we're going to have a hearing where the rest of the public cannot see it. All right, let's take a look at this case. The city better get their checkbook ready. This surveillance footage can be a little disturbing. Surveillance footage captures the moment a handcuffed suspect was paralyzed after being slammed against the door of a police van before being dragged out of the back by cops in Connecticut this past week. Now, Richard Cox is 36, and he was arrested on June 19th for possession of an illegal firearm, and he was transported in a van without seatbelts to the New Haven Police Department when the vehicle came to a sudden stop, tossing Mr. Cox headfirst into the wall. Now, Mr. Cox is now apparently fighting for his life at a local hospital where he's paralyzed from the neck down and has to use a breathing tube. Now, Officer Oscar Diaz apparently pulled the van over to check on Cox after the sudden stop. What happened? Diaz asked as Cox attempted to tell him various times that he was unable to move his body. Diaz called an ambulance and proceeded to drive the police van to the headquarters. Multiple officers responded to the van and insisted Cox get up to leave the van, despite Cox insisting he couldn't move. "If you got to drag me out, do what you got to do," Cox told the police officers as they proceeded to pull him out by the leg. Sit up, an officer told Cox numerous times as he was placed and slumped over in a wheelchair with his head hanging to the far side of his shoulders. The officers proceeded to take Mr. Cox inside the station for processing without providing him medical attention. Now, before dragging Cox on the floor of a cell and handcuffing his feet together, officers accused him of consuming drugs and alcohol, claiming that that was his issue. He's perfectly fine, you can hear an officer say. Well, like I said, Cox is currently at a hospital in New Haven, and he's paralyzed from the chest down and is using a breathing tube. Needless to say, his quality of life is probably forever diminished, which more than likely means somebody in New Haven, Connecticut Police Department, well, the taxpayers are probably going to write a big old check on that one. Why couldn't they have not buckled him in? Really? Yeah, not good. Austin police have obtained a murder warrant in the death of pro cyclist Anna Maria Mo Wilson. Now, quick background before we get to the new update. First, Austin police found Wilson, 25, riddled with gunshot wounds in a friend's home around 10 p.m. on May 11th. The California resident is one of the country's top pro cyclists and was visiting Texas ahead of a competition when she went out for an evening with Colin Strickland, another pro cyclist whom police describe as Armstrong's boyfriend. Now, moments after Strickland dropped Wilson off that evening, according to investigators, Armstrong's SUV showed up on surveillance video outside. Now, the same day, an anonymous caller told Austin police that Armstrong had recently obtained a handgun. Now, months earlier, according to the tipster, she allegedly grew furious after learning that Strickland was involved in a romantic relationship with Wilson, her boyfriend. Police said that one of the two 9mm handguns they recovered at Strickland's home was significant to the investigation. Now, Armstrong may have visited her sister at a campground about 120 miles away from the New York City airport. Then, her last known whereabouts were at the Newark International Airport in New Jersey, which is about 120 miles away from the camp, back on May 18th. Now, the U.S. Marshal said that they did not find a record of any departing flights in her name. Now, a day before, Caitlin Armstrong was seen in New Jersey. This is the sister who allegedly obtained a New York State's driver's license. So police in Austin previously said they'd already recovered a handgun used to kill Wilson after searching Strickland's home, where Armstrong also lived. Now, the U.S. Marshals announced Thursday morning, 43 days into the manhunt, and said that she had been arrested and captured on Wednesday. So the Costa Rican authorities assisted U.S. law enforcement in tracking Armstrong to a hotel on the Santa Teresa Beach. The Marshal Service elevated Caitlin Armstrong's investigation to major crime status early in the investigation, and Armstrong is expected to be deported to face justice in the United States, where she's obviously been charged with murder and unlawfully fleeing prosecution, and which likely played a key role in her capture 43 days on the run. Now, the question is, why does everyone always think Costa Rica is a non-extraditable country? I hear that all the time. Should I leave the country? Should I go to Costa Rica? Well, guess what? Costa Rica has a long-standing extradition treaty with the United States. And extradition is an action wherein one jurisdiction delivers a person accused of or convicted of committing a crime in another jurisdiction over to the other jurisdiction's law enforcement. It is a cooperative law enforcement procedure between the two jurisdictions, and it depends on the arrangements. Now, the non-extraditable countries, wait till you hear this list, Serbia, United Arab Emirates, which may not be too bad, but I hear it gets really hot there, Namibia, Cambodia, and yes, that's right, Belarus, right next to the Ukraine, basically controlled by Russia. Now, Russia, for example, will not cooperate with the U.S., even though they do have extradition treaties. For example, they refused to return Edward Snowden to the United States despite considerable diplomatic pressure. So just remember that, ladies and gentlemen. There's very few places you can go. Oh, and I guess we should probably throw in, I think Cuba won't extradite you back. But most countries don't want criminals running around there, so unless you pay somebody off, it's going to be tough.